Your Day podcast for the big storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Tuesday, April 9th. I have both good and bad news for all of you listeners to start today's show. The bad news is we have just one tour level event on the calendar this week. Nothing on the WTA side of things, just one tournament for the men. But thankfully, folks, that is where the good news picks up. That one ATP event on the calendar this week, it's a 1,000 level event, dare I say, the true start to the European clay court swing happening this week in Monte Carlo. That event sees just about all of the top men's tennis players in the world competing in it. In fact, we've already had the opportunity this week to see Novak Djokovic kick off his clay court swing in tremendous fashion. He was dominant, dare I say, again, dominant today in a straight set victory over Roman Safiulin. Of course, we've also already had the opportunity to see guys like Sasha Zverev, Karen Khachanov, Hubi Hurkacz pick up impressive victories in their Monte Carlo debuts. Some really fun round one matches as well. Korda versus Davidovich Fokina, Baez versus Struff, and others that seem to be setting a very fun tone for this week's Monte Carlo action. Of course, that event is going to be the focus of today's podcast. I want to break down the draw for all of you listeners so you know what to watch for moving forward. Of course, we did get some big draw-related news early in the week as it relates to Monte Carlo, as unfortunately, Carlos Alcaraz was forced to pull out of this event due to injury. I know he's questionable now heading into Barcelona as well. I think all of us just want to see him at his healthiest come Roland Garros, because that has always seemed like an event that when he does reach the peaks of his powers, boy, could he dominate at Roland Garros moving forward. Certainly, again, a disappointing note for tennis fans here early in the week. Certainly, though, opens up some opportunities, right, for a guy like Casper Ruud, who's now the highest remaining seed in that section of the draw in a portion of the calendar where, obviously, if he's going to make a year-end finals push, this is always a three-month stretch where he's got to rack up a lot of points. So, want to run you through each of the sections. Djokovic, now I'll say Casper Ruud, since he's the highest seed there. Daniil Medvedev, Jannik Sinner, each the highest seeds in their respective quarters of the draw. So again, you know what storylines to watch for. Who are the players who need a big week? By the way, again, at the start, I also want to break down some of my observations from our early round action that we've already seen unfold in Monte Carlo. It's also worth noting, as we add to the good news section here at the start of today's show, that while we don't have a WTA Tour level event, we do have Billie Jean King Cup action, or dare I say, what was formerly known as Fed Cup action on the women's side. And I'll be honest, I haven't taken a deep dive yet into looking who is playing whom and what are the lineups for each of these teams, who are the juggernauts entering this 2024 Billie Jean King Cup calendar year. I will try to do that later in the week, certainly as I become more aware of what the matchups, the lineups are, but that is on the calendar this week for those of you who are looking for your WTA Tour fix. Of course, it's also one of the final weekends of the 2024 college tennis regular season. So just a reminder, if you haven't already, we'll have coverage for you Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this week, available on ESPN Plus. That coverage will spread out across the Big 12, ACC, SEC conferences, dare I say the three best conferences we have in all of college tennis. Of course, we will also have Sunday coverage of everything happening in the Big 10 on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel, so be on the lookout for all of those broadcasts over the course of this week. It's been a really fun college tennis season. We recap it every week, Tuesday, Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, live on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel. Those shows post as GSP episodes Wednesday, Thursday as well. So if you're looking to catch up on everything happening in the Division I men's and women's world, if you want to find out who the next Ben Shelton, Danielle Collins, Emma Navarro, Cam Norries, etc. might be, tune into our coverage of everything happening in the college tennis world. Again, I believe this weekend is our final regular weekend of regular season coverage for the Big 12, ACC, and SEC. So it's the last time here this season you're going to hear me plug this, do go check that out. It would mean the world to us here at Cracked Rackets. Again, all that coverage available on ESPN+. Of course, we're rocking and rolling across our various platforms as well. The Great Shot podcast feed, Cracked Interviews podcast feed, new episodes posted each and every week. We're getting content going on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel as well. A shout out, as always, to Westhoff, who makes it all happen. A thank you to you listeners who tune in, day out, week in, week out. And a thank you, of course, to the support we get for this show from our friends at Tennis Point. Remember, for the latest and greatest equipment at the best prices, there's only one place to shop. It's tennis-point.com. Make sure you use our promo code CR15 to let them know we sent you there. All right. Let's talk Monte Carlo here on today's show. By the way, there are five ATP challengers on the calendar this week as well. A shout out, as always, to our dear friend Damian Kust, who covers all of the action. I'm going to do my best to try and chat with some players who are competing this week in Sarasota. It's a very fun draw. Guys like Tanasi Kokkinakis and, you know, young Americans, Ethan Quinn, Martin Dahm, two guys 21 and under who, I'm telling you, have a top 100 runway moving forward. You've got the veterans, Tennis Sandgren, Mitchell Krueger, the birthday brother Juan Pablo Farias. By the way, top seed J.J. Wolf knocked out in round one by Dimitri Popko. Sarasota Challenger is my favorite of the group of the five on the calendar this week. But again, there's a lot of good ones across the globe happening. Today, I'm going to focus on Monte Carlo, but I am certain that at some point this week, we'll dive into those five ATP challengers, particularly if something spicy happens in Sarasota, as that Sarasota Challenger event, part of the USTA Wildcard Challenge. You have, I think it's a four-week stretch, three challenger events or whatever it may be, to accumulate X amount of points. Whichever player does accumulate the most points during that stretch of time, they'll be granted the USTA wild card into the Roland Garros main draw. You think of a guy like Patrick Kipson, who's made a push since getting it last year. Historically, again, a guy like Francis Tiafoe got his career rocking and rolling, really, when he got that wild card. I can point to so many different examples, but that's why we want to keep an eye on what's happening at Sarasota this week, because that is a part of that French Open Wildcard Challenge. That said, now let's start talking 2024 ATP Monte Carlo action. Let's start with some rapid fire thoughts from the early results that have emerged. Again, who are the seeds that have looked most impressive? I mean, you got to start with Novak Djokovic, who doesn't enter this portion of the calendar with a question mark regarding his legacy. That legacy has been cemented, and he can take things to the nth power if he does capture the one thing missing on his resume. He does capture that gold medal in singles at this summer's Olympics. Maybe, you know, again, that's the last legacy piece or legacy altering piece. If he wins that gold medal, there's just no angle in terms of most accomplished or greatest of all time tennis player, however you want to phrase it. At that point, on the men's side, Novak Djokovic will have the crown unequivocally. I personally believe he has it already. But in terms of his status as the unequivocal world number one in 2024's game, absolutely he enters this Monte Carlo with some question marks. The way he lost to Nardi at Indian Wells, the way he lost to Sinner at the Australian Open. Again, he's only played two events so far this year, so the notion that, oh, he hasn't won a title yet in 2024, that never happens through this portion of the calendar. Look at the event schedule that he's played. He also used to play more than two events through the first 4 months or 3 months of the year. Obviously, now he paces himself, and dare I say, it does feel like all signs are pointing towards him trying to peak at those Paris Olympics. But, oh my God, just to see how crisp his footwork well was, to see how penetrating his ground strokes were, just he disrupted everything Roman Safiulin wanted to do. 6-1, 6-2. Djokovic cruised in this match, and even though, you know, again, he doesn't have the biggest sample size of matches so far this year, he loses second match at Indian Wells, semifinals again at Australia. Despite those being the two results on his resume, he is still just one of six players to rank top 15 in both hold and break percentage right now. Now, again, I acknowledge only 3 months of data to turn to. Those numbers are a little bit noisy right now, as joining him in the top 15 club is Stefanos Tsitsipas. But this Monte Carlo result for Djokovic had less to do with the numbers and more to do with the eye test. This was the first time he looked like Novak freaking Djokovic, where it's just, again, he was everywhere he needed to be with half a second to spare. the corners, again, just the placement of the ball, where he wanted to put it, was on a string the entirety of the match. He had rhythm behind his first serve. He has had some time, since Indian Wells, a full month to prepare himself, or a full 3 weeks to prepare himself for this clay court transition. Whatever he seems to have done over the 3 weeks seems to have paid off, at least through match number one. Again, he was dominant in a straight set victory. I thought Sasha Zverev as well, dominant over Sebastian Ofner, and just continue to consolidate my belief that he is closer to the top four than anyone else in the men's field. And I think it's pretty definitive in that case as well. Again, just found the Sebastian Ofner forehand whenever he needed to, was bunting down on forehands. He has become a good volleyer, not just an adequate volleyer. No, Sasha Zverev is a good volleyer now. Some of the drop volleys he hits, again, was under a little bit of pressure trying to serve out the match, 5-4 in that second set, 5-4, 30-all, pushes forward on a shaky approach shot to the Ofner forehand, and yet the backhand cross-court drop volley he executed. He hit it like he meant to do it, which, dare I say again, even as recently as 2 years ago, pre-injury, I don't think that's who Sasha Zverev was as a volleyer. So I do think he continues to look like the fifth best player in the world. I think that number five seed next to his name this week certainly justifies. He cruised 3-4 over Sebastian Ofner. Your other winners in round two thus far, shout out Lorenzo Musetti, who has looked really good through two matches. 4-4, he knocked out Taylor Fritz. Then 3-5, he knocks out Arthur Fee. He has become the forgotten Italian, because obviously Yannick Sinner is the man right now, and Nardi beat Djokovic at Indian Wells. Arnaldi has moments all the time and made a fourth round at last year's U.S. Open, and obviously Caboli has had his moments as well. What did he make? Third round of the Australian Open, but he's springy and some sort of athlete and making a push. Dardari just won his first title during the South American clay court swing and made another semifinal in Houston last week. Again, through it all, who's been the guy that's been top 30 alongside of Sinner? It's not any of those other Italian men. No, it's Lorenzo Musetti, who, yes, is still a very young, let's be clear, very young, 22 years old. He's kind of been a top 30 guy for, not kind of, he has been a top 30 guy for 18 months now, even if there has been some variance, some swings in his level of play. But we know who he is when we get back to the clay courts. This is a guy who once upon a time had a 2-sets-to-love lead on Novak Djokovic at Roland Garros. And obviously that was a long time ago, but you look for him in his career at the ATP level on clay courts. Lorenzo Musetti, 48-29, again, 62% win percentage. You look at what he was able to do last year, 16-11, but quarters of Monte Carlo where he beat Djokovic, semis of Barcelona, round of 16 Roland Garros as well. He's a top 16 guy, like a top 12 guy, maybe even on these clay courts, and certainly projects to move even higher moving forward in his career. The thing that is just most impressive is the fluidity. I mean, this guy in and out of corners, how he slides into his shots, which again, what's the difference between a good and a great mover? It's the first time I've gotten to say this in 2024. Longtime listeners, you're like, welcome back to this sentence. I haven't missed it at all. What's the difference between a good and a great mover on clay courts? A good mover slides out of the shot to recover. A great mover slides into his shot. So as soon as he's done making contact, he's able to take that first step immediately back towards the center of the court, back to recovering to attacking position or whatever it may be. The Musetti fluidity is just laughable. The backhand slice, the drop shot, the on-the-run forehand short angle that he can rip through the court. Again, he just straight up beat Arthur Fee in a lot of those cross-court exchanges, beat Taylor Fritz in a bunch of those cross-court exchanges. Fritz was up 4-2 in that first set, didn't win another game as Musetti went on to 6-4 in that set. And again, a 4-4 overall victory for him. Despite making under 57% of his first serves in each of his matches against Fritz, Fee, he was broken just twice in each of those matches, which again, just the context of those first serve numbers, I think speak to how well he's defending behind that first serve, how well he's changing direction, how well he swings through his one-handed backhand. I've said this before, he's got the best one-handed backhand in the top 100. I don't think it's particularly close right now. Gasquet, not in the top 100. For those of you wondering at home, Musetti, again, this is the sort of start. This is the exact tone he would have wanted to set to start this clay court season. And up next, obviously, he's got the rematch from last season with Novak Djokovic here in Monte Carlo. So thank you, tennis gods, for showering that matchup back upon us. But even if he loses that one, to get two wins over two guys lower than him in the rankings, to get himself back up to number 20, again, hold serve, there I say, through this first clay court event in what is always a big swing for the Italian, he's looked really good, and he's just moving so well. And I do think he continues to get more comfortable swinging through his forehand. It's improved by leaps and bounds over the course of the last 3 years. Really impressed by Lorenzo Musetti's start here in Monte Carlo. Again, wins over Fritz to pull off the upset, and then the win over Arthur Fee in round number two to set up the battle with Djokovic. A couple of seeds who have also stood out to me with their early round play in Monte Carlo: Hubi Hurkacz, Karen Khachanov as well. You look for Hubi in particular. It would have been very easy for him to, much like, dare I say, Matteo Berrettini, take a schedule loss early here in Monte Carlo. Berrettini knocked out 3-1 by Miomir Kecmanovic. I'm reading nothing into that. That gives me no hesitation on Berrettini moving forward. Again, he's put together two really good week stretches, a really good week in Phoenix. Obviously, he wins the title last week in Marrakesh. Got knocked out round one the next week after Phoenix in Miami. Gets knocked out round one here in Monte Carlo the next week after Marrakesh. Takes a little bit of time for a player to get their sea legs back under them after missing as much time as Matteo Berrettini did. So, again, doesn't change my perception of Matteo Berrettini in any sort of way negatively. Had he won that match, that would have been the big thing for me that, dare I say, maybe you'd think that much more positively in thinking, oh man, he really is back moving forward. You know, for Hubi Hurkacz to get a 6-4, 3-6, 7-6 in the third win over a guy like Jack Draper, who, if you're a longtime listener of this show, you all know my thoughts on Jack Draper as a prospect moving forward. When Hubi loses that second set 6-3, when he, from up a break, gives that break back to Draper in the third set, felt to me like, oh man, maybe this is where the clock strikes midnight. Maybe this is where Hubi, like Berrettini, says, you know what? I had a really good run last week in Astara. I won the title. Yeah, I get knocked out here in Monte Carlo early. Let's reset. Let's refocus. Let's get revamped heading into the rest of this clay court season. But that's not what happened. He did what the best players in the world do. They find a way to grind out victories when, again, parts of their game escape them. And this was the first time in this clay court stretch where it felt like Hubi Hurkacz's forehand really abandoned him for a prolonged stretch. And credit to Jack Draper, who, again, the relentlessness of that backhand cross, the fact that if you float anything, Draper's so aggressive with his footwork and getting around that ball, snapping off a forehand, moving in behind it. He put pressures on Hurkacz in all the right ways you want to put pressure on the 10th seed here in Monte Carlo. But man, I don't know if there's anyone I trust more in a deciding breaker right now than 10th-seeded Hubi Hurkacz. And for what it's worth, in his last 52 weeks after this win, he's only 9-6 in deciding set breakers over his last 52 weeks. But, you know, this is a guy who now, in his last 52 weeks of play, he has played 67 tiebreakers overall. He's now 34-33 overall in those breakers after his win over Draper in the third set. It's a lot of tie breaks for Hubi Hurkacz, a guy who, by the way, is number two in hold percentage in this 2024 season, number one in hold percentage overall over the last 52 weeks amongst top 50 players. Didn't hit the backhand return line as much as I'd expect, as much as I expected him to do, and as successfully as he did in Estoril last week. But he was also facing, dare I say, a bigger serve than he faced at any point last week in Estoril in the serve of Jack Draper. It felt like that play was less available to him. You know, felt like he really didn't want to go forehand cross because he was kind of losing those exchanges to Draper, who's just, again, so solid off of that backhand wing. But Hubi really pulled away in that third set breaker, and when he landed the down-the-line forehand inside-in for 5-1, you just felt like, okay, this one's over. And again, it's a credit to Hurkacz for being aggressive from the jump in that third set breaker. Hubi able to advance to round number two, escaping with the three-set win. You know who else looked really impressive? Karen Khachanov, the number 15 seed, a 5-6 win over a Cam Nori, who, by the way, one of 13 players right now, top 25 in both hold and break percentage. Cam Nori pushes you physically. A Cam Norrie who takes everything you throw at him and just neutralizes it. And again, uses your pace against you, uses your angles against you. You leave something short, you fall asleep at the wheel for a second. He snaps a forehand at some uncomfortable short cross-court angle or hits that slice serve out wide that gets you dragged so far outside the alley. And now you have to sprint all the way back to hit an on-the-run forehand that Karen Khachanov has never been the most comfortable with anyways. And yet it was how well Khachanov passed in this match. The fact that Khachanov was 5'6", I believe it was either love 40 or 15. I think it was 15-40. It was 5'6", 15-40 down. You know, again, works his way back to holding for 6-all and then from there takes that breaker to win the second set, get off the court in straights. That's what the best players in the world do. And again, when he's been healthy, two titles now to his name over these last 52 weeks, the Middle East, yeah, in February, and then snapping the streak at the end of last year. Obviously, all the slam success he had prior to getting injured last season at the end of 2022. That's why I wasn't ready to eliminate him when we did our first third review, because I do think Karen Khachanov's playing, I wouldn't say top 8 tennis. I'd put him in that top 12 category. I think he is right in the mix. It takes very good tennis to beat him. Norrie was good. He wasn't very good today, and that's why Khachanov able to advance in straight sets to round number 2. I mentioned the Musetti upset over Fritz, your other upset. Dare I say, it's the first relevant win of the season for Borna Coric. 1-1, he knocks off 16th-seeded Sasha Bublik to get to round number 2. Where is Borna Coric right now in the live rankings? I'm glad you all asked. Coric is currently 32. That feels both simultaneously too high and too low. Like, I couldn't name a single notable run of Borna Coric's from the last 52 weeks. Probably nothing notable since he won that Cincy title summer of 2022. And yet I know what he's capable of. Obviously, this is a guy who is he's a 96. I've followed him forever. He was the guy of my generation who was competing for junior slam titles and was the prospect that was promised. And obviously, so many injuries have derailed what was a pretty not on script, because maybe you thought he'd be a tier higher, but a guy who was in the mix clearly and seemed to be forecasted to be in the mix moving forward in his career. Nice for him to just get things going here. 1-1, knock off the seeded Bublik, who really just had no answers for him at any point of this. And, you know, next up for him now, what, he's going to get Jan Lennard Struff, who I actually think, never mind, Struff knocks him off 6-1 in round number 2. Much needed win for Jan Lennard Struff, who some of you may remember last year was the Monte Carlo darling, right? Came from qualifying at last year's Monte Carlo event, was able to reach the quarterfinals, then makes that run to the finals of Madrid. So he's got those points to defend coming up as well. In fact, Struff, with all those points coming off of his resume, fell down to 28. Obviously, when he loses those Madrid finals point, that fall might be even more precipitous given the injuries he dealt with at the end of last year. Not a ton of other points on the resume right now. Still, much needed win for Jan Lennard Struff, who also was very, very impressive in a 3-set win, knocking off Sebi Baez 1-6, 7-6, 6-2 to advance out of round number 1. So again, Struff needs a big week. He's off to the right pace. Two impressive victories for him. Other guys you'd put in the impressive category. Again, Smit Nagal, first Indian male player to win a main draw match here at Monte Carlo, 5-7, 6-2, 6-4. He knocks off Matteo Arnaldi with the result. Nagal, 26 years old, up to a new career high number 80 in the live ranking. Shout out to Sumit Nagal. Shout out to Tomas Martin Echeverry, 4-5 win over Nicolas Jarry. That's just a darn good win. And then signs of life. You know, every time you're ready to write Sebi Korda off, disappointing sunshine swing, really didn't give us anything notable to discuss. He 1-2'd Davidovich Fokina in his opening round match here in Monte Carlo. And now he's got a date with Jannik Sinner. That is just popcorn. Like, again, tell me why Korda can't win that match. And that feels like the ultimate Sebi Korda moment is, after a disappointing sunshine swing, he comes here to Monte Carlo in Sinner's clay court debut. Korda beats him in that match, like goes on to make a quarterfinal or semifinal run here, something really encouraging. And then, you know, again, goes 4-2 goes 7-4 over the course of his next four events leading into the week before Roland Garros, where he'll inevitably win a title and then get knocked out round 2 of the French Open. Like, that's been the script for Sebi Korda round thus far in his career, and yet I still remain immensely compelled, because to watch him 2-1 Davidovich Chokina, you're just like, oh yeah, you do have that sort of firepower where you really could overwhelm anyone on the right day where things are just in rhythm for you and you're swinging confidently and moving well. And again, it's been a really fun start to this Monte Carlo event. I think it sets up a really fun round two across the draw. And certainly as you're trying to project things moving forward, we could have some very fun matchups in the future. And in that spirit, let's get into the draw preview. Let's look at the four quarters of the draw, what you all can expect to see unfold or what you should be watching for, I should say, moving forward. Let's start at the top of the draw with number one overall seed Novak Djokovic. Again, Djokovic already through to the round of 16 following his win over Safiulin to set up a date with Lorenzo Musetti. Your reminder, Musetti beat him at this event last year. Now, it was a very different context, certainly for Novak Djokovic, who didn't play the Sunshine Swing last season, so didn't have any match play going into the event. Now, again, Djokovic hasn't played since Indian Wells going into this Monte Carlo, but given... And I say his struggles in the context of struggles relative to the standards Novak Djokovic sets for himself, given, again, how well he played in round number one, it feels like there's a little bit more focus, a little bit more significance for Novak placed on coming out strong here in Monte Carlo. But last year, 4-6, 7-5, 6-4 win for Lorenzo Musetti, a match where he was broken seven times and still managed to knock off the world number one. Again, Djokovic, what, overall in that matchup, 3-1. In the career head-to-head, but it's always been fun when those two have faced off on this surface, and Musetti has the athleticism, the improvisational skills to just hang around and force the best, coax the best out of Novak, so looking forward to that one. You know, looking in the rest of this section, it's a fascinating section in the sense that I believe what defending champion Andrei Rublev in this section of the draw, the number six seed, gets his tournament kicked off. Tricky matchup. A guy who does Rublev-esque things with his serve, his forehand, in Alexei Poprin. Now, I do think Rublev far more versatile is the wrong word, but he has more dimensions to his game. He hits through the backhand better. He volleys better. He puts in the return more consistently. He's more aggressive with his return positioning. But man, if Poprin's landing the first serve, he finds first forehands. And when he finds first forehands, if he needs them, you're just in trouble. You're not going to get a lot of rhythm. So that match is going to feature a lot of first strike, a lot of five shots or fewer sorts of rallies. It'll be a good test to see where Andrei Rublev's level is coming into this clay court swing. And again, Rublev had a really disappointing Indian Wells Miami stretch. He hasn't looked like the sixth best player in the world. Again, he would not be a guy I would see at the ATP, in my ATP Tour Finals field right now. But defending champion, going to get things going against Poprin. On the other side, you've got 11th seeded Alex de Minaur, who maybe played his best clay court match. Now, to beat Stan Wawrinka at this point of Stan's career, obviously doesn't carry the weight it once did. But de Minaur snapping the forehand. He's starting to slide into shots, which is, again, a dangerous thing. The best sort of movers, what separates good from great in this sport as a mover, when you're sliding into that ball as you make contact, as opposed to sliding out of the shot. He'll get tested by a Talon Griekspoor, who's got some serious weapons, will push that Demon Hour movement. But, again, the Demon Hour first serve has been a revelation here over the past 15 months. It just feels real. He wins more free points. He sets up easier opportunities for himself. He attacks behind that first serve even better with his first forehand, better depth on the backhand, even if at times it can still get a little stuck in the mud on this surface. Demon Hour is playing the best big picture right now. Rublev is the best clay court player of the four, but he's really struggling. I'll take Rublev to right the ship before getting knocked out by Novak, but I do see Novak getting through his quarter, especially if we see that same energy he brought to round number one, that same efficiency. I see him getting through it relatively unscathed. According to Tennis Abstract, he has a 48.6% chance of doing precisely that. Of course, in the quarter beneath Novak Djokovic is where the absence of Carlos Alcaraz is felt. Alcaraz replaced in the draw by lucky loser Lorenzo Sonego. Sonego going to face off against Felix Auger-Aliassime, who looked really good in his opening round straight set victory over qualifier Luca Nardi. That's a fascinating section because Sonego's the best clay court player and has the clearest cut pathway to the quarterfinals. The lucky loser, again, not going to be favored against Felix, but certainly more clay court success historically. Zhang Zhizhen, the big hitting player from China, I wouldn't see his, I mean, again, his boom or bust, it'll work anywhere, but I wouldn't count him a traditional clay quarter in his first round matches against 14th seeded Hugo Humbert, who, again, the slower the surface, typically the worse the performance in the draw for Humbert. That's a wide open section, a massive opportunity for any of those players. Sonego in particular has to feel like, okay, what a break this is. Like, there's a world where Sonego now ends up in the quarterfinals. I really liked what I saw from Felix in round number one, so I'd be bold and take him to advance. But this section, Casper Ruud versus Alejandro Tabilo is the opening match for Ruud. That's brutal because Tabilo has already made two finals here in 2024. He won a title, of course, in Auckland, finals of Santiago, where he got knocked out by Seppi Baez. But, you know, he played the full South American clay court swing, the lefty with a big serve into the Casper Ruud backhand. You know, has the weapons, plays with the sort of decisiveness to take advantage of that, the spot you have to attack if you want any sort of chance of beating Casper Ruud on this surface. You know, Casper got a little shaky in his Estoril semifinal, but I thought otherwise actually looked pretty good. Obviously, he served so well to start this 2024 season. I mean, Casper should win the match. Like, again, his discipline, his ability to extend rallies, find the Tabilo backhand, pick on the fact that sometimes Tabilo does get a little bit tentative. Sometimes he shifts to this default gear of not using his weapons as frequently as he should and, you know, using his length to be 6 to 10 feet behind the baseline. And if you give Casper Ruud time, boy, does he take the time and create space for himself on this surface so well. Like, two-time French Open finalist. That's a really good matchup. In round number one, I think whoever gets through this would probably be my favorite to advance to the semifinals out of the section. Now, obviously, Hubi, who just got the big 7-6 in the third win over Draper, he'll have RBA next. Neither of those guys notorious for their clay court success. So you'd say advantage Hubi in that one. It should be Djokovic Ruud in the semifinal. I know that's sticking to the script here, but obviously Alcaraz out of the draw. Like, if Ruud gets through to Tabilo, he should get to the semifinals. I think the winner of that match, though, is the person who ultimately faces Djokovic in that semifinal. In the Medvedev quarter of the draw, you will find the most fascinating quarter of this draw. Not only, obviously, do you have fourth-seeded Daniil Medvedev, who, as I discussed with David Kane last week, he's yet to hit 100 career wins on the ATP level on clay courts. You look for Medvedev in his career. Obviously, his first clay court title coming last season. Where did he have that clay court title? I believe it was, what, in Rome? Yeah, where he got that clay court title. But you look for him in his career, 28-26 on clay courts at the tour level in his career. 28-26. Now, again, he has made a Barcelona final. The Rome title, Roland Garros quarterfinal in 2021 as well. 28-26 on clay. All right. Round number one, he'll face Gael Monfils. Always, you know, again, historically, you know, again, it's a really weird fun fact, and I don't know how much weight I'd actually put behind it, but you look for Daniil Medvedev. It's always a fun one. In his career against players from France, he has struggled. I know that seems like a random sample size to turn to, but because it does feel particularly notable, 49-35, excuse me, in his career against players from France. 7-11, though, against French players in his career on clay, and he's lost his last eight matches. That's what it was. His last eight matches on clay against players from France, most recently Geneva round of 16 against Richard Gasquet. So yeah, it's been a while, but I'm excited to see how Daniil Medvedev competes on the clay this year. Again, this is the best section because Francisco Cerúndolo, you know, built his game on those South American clay courts, built his ranking off South American clay court challenger success. He can find his way around Karen Khachanov. That is a fascinating round of 16 match. How about Stefanos Tsitsipas? He faces last year's French Open quarterfinalist Tomas Martin Echeverry in his round of 16 match. The winner of that, Echeverry Tsitsipas, plays Zverev in the round of 16. Any permutation of the Medvedev quarter you're in on. And whoever advances out of this quarter had the toughest pathway to the semifinals. And as a player, you just got to start looking at it as, okay, like, you beat X, Y, and Z to get to this semifinal. Welcome to, you are a top eight clay court player coming out of this Monte Carlo event, in my mind, because that's the sort of resume you're going to have to build if you want to get to the semifinal out of this section. Again, who's the favorite, according to Tennis Abstract? Medvedev, 34.1%, Zverev, 33.4%, then Tsitsipas, 22.8%. Again, Tsitsipas historically has been very good on the clay courts, and according to the numbers, he's returning pretty well this year, but those numbers obviously feel a little bit misleading, although he did look very comfortable in his round one win over Laszlo Zverev, even though Zverev was forced to retire from the match. He'll get tested in a much more significant fashion against a very physical Tomas Martin Echeverry, who, as a reminder, I always call Diet Casper Ruud. I love this section. I mean, again, it's a prove-it sort of match for Cerúndolo. Whose forehand is bigger between he and Khachanov? Who's going to be more disciplined? Certainly you'd lean Khachanov in that category. Can Daniil Medvedev hit through the court frequently enough to get over this Guillaume Monfils challenge? Again, does Tsitsipas have the discipline? Can his backhand hold up long enough? Because Echeverri is going to be peppering in kick serves wide and first forehands inside out. I love this section of the draw. I know I just talked about every other player but him. Sasha Zverev should advance out of this section, given, again, the Daniil Medvedev struggles on this surface. Although, obviously, if it's a Medvedev-Zverev head-to-head, that's one of my favorite rivalries we have right now, because it does feel like there's actual animosity between those two in the sense that there's an understanding, I got to get through you, you got to get through me, and then we probably both still have to get through these kids to rack up the slams and build the resumes and make people remember our generation or be the face of this next-gen generation, the spot they are clearly the two pole sitters fighting for. I think Zverev gets through this quarter, but everyone has a question to answer. Obviously, for Stefanos Tsitsipas, after the disaster that was a first third, I mean, to get thrown into the wolves, that is this Medvedev quarter right away. Will he sink? Will he swim? Let's find out. If Tsitsipas comes out of this having beaten Echeverri, Zverev, and then whomever comes out of that bottom half of this quarter, Khachanov, Cerúndolo, Monfils, or Medvedev, respectively, to get to the semifinals, regardless of what would happen in those semifinals, you'd have to just start taking him more seriously back in that top eight discussion as it relates to clay court players right now in the world. Still, that is by far the most fascinating section. We will keep an eye on all things Medvedev quarter moving forward throughout the course of the week. And last, but certainly not least, you've got the Yannick Sinner quarter of the draw. Again, the most fascinating round two matchup remaining for me. Echeverri, Tsitsipas, Tabilo, Ruud are the honorable mention, but Korda, Sinner's number one on the list. And in theory, Seppi Korda has the size, he has the weapons, he has the skills and an ability to move forward. He has the backhand that holds up under that Sinner cross-court pressure. In theory, this is why he's on paper still one of the most tantalizing prospects and certainly high on my list of prospects we have in men's tennis, because on paper, he can do all the things you need to do at an elite level to hang with the best players in the world. The question is, can he put all those pieces together within the framework of a single match, and can he do it consistently enough throughout the course of that match and consistently enough throughout the course of a calendar? Can his body hold up long enough to become that player full-time on tour? But man, oh man, like, it's Sinner's first match on clay, and boy, is, again, you'd love to get someone who will offer you a little bit more rhythm than what Seppi Korda is going to offer you in that battle. And by the way, speaking of lack of rhythm, winner of that faces Jan Lennard Struff, who gives you anything but rhythm with his aggressive first strike mentality. So again, Sinner's going to get tested by some big weapons right out of the bat. Off the bat, we'll see if the physicality he's shown on hard courts, that elite physicality, that elite rally tolerance that allows him to get into his offensive playbook from there, if that translates over to the clay as well as it certainly seems to project to do. I thought Dimitrov was awesome in his round one win over Val Vastro. Again, there's just a confidence, a health. He's found that plane that allows him to play his best tennis. He will be the favorite in this section, even though Holger Rune's got the better clay court resume coming into this year. Rune gets Nagal round number one, probably what you'd ask for, even though Nagal played some good ball in advancing to round number two. But man, Rune Dimitrov as a round of 16 matchup, sign me up for that. Considering it's week two of this 2024 clay court season, still Sinner the significant favorite. In fact, of all of the quarters, Sinner the second biggest favorite. Djokovic, 62.8% to advance to the semis, but he already won a match. I wonder if Sinner will be higher than him afterwards. Sinner, 56.1% to advance to the semis. After that, they have Runa as the slight favorite over Dimitrov by 0.2%. According to Tennis Abstract, Djokovic is the favorite right now. 29.3% chance of winning the event. After that, Sinner, 23.6%. After that, they go Medvedev 8-4, Zverev 7-8. So yeah, Tennis Abstract's pretty clear. They think it's Djokovic or Sinner taking the title here this week. Before I make a prediction, let me see everyone play once, and then I will offer a prediction for all of you listeners on tomorrow's show. But that's your look at this ATP Monte Carlo 1000 level event. Now, again, we've got five challengers on the calendar this week. Billie Jean King Cup coming up as well. We'll take a look at all of those events on later episodes this week. A reminder, it's our final weekend of coverage on ESPN Plus of this 2024 Division I college tennis regular season. If you want to know who the next Danielle Collins, Ben Shelton, Cam Norrie, Emma Navarro, Peyton Stearns, Jana Kampfman, I can go on and on with all these top 150, 30 players. You want to know who the next from the college ranks that might be of that ilk, who that might be, come check out our coverage because we get to show off the best of the best every weekend, Thursday through Sunday, this weekend on ESPN Plus, Sunday on our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel as well. A shout out, as always, by the way, to our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, who has a of an editing job to do day in, day out, making all of our content possible. A shout out and thank you to him. A shout out and thank you as well to the support we get from our dear friends at Tennis Point. Remember, it's tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15 for all of the latest and greatest products in the tennis world. With that said, for our fantastic super producer, Daniel Westhoff, our friends at Tennis Point, from all of us here at both Crack Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say, that's the break, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.